It is Saturday, January 8th, 2011, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news in the second half, your questions and comments about technology. It's time now for Geek Speak. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
So you're living in a world that you don't know nothing about. Sitting at your keyboard, paralyzed with doubt. But just sit tight, we're here to help you out. We don't know it all, but we'll tell you what we found out. And if it's all Greek to you, then let us speak geek to you. We're here each week for you on your radio.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridge the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP.
And the latest technological innovations on your local public radio station. So if it's all Greek to you, then let us speak geek to you. We're here each week for you on your radio.
My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have Mr. Miles Elam, hacker. No, not really a hacker, programmer, and political junkie. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy New Year and all that, too. And Mr. Al Luckow, he's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everybody.
Now, Al, you weren't here last week.
No.
So we didn't hear what your New Year's resolution was. Miles' New Year's resolution was to teach a bit of math to a new person every week. How's it going?
Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't another person. It was myself. I watched a few lectures on iTunes U, which I highly recommend, of trigonometry, which I'd already taken, so it was kind of like a refresher.
Nice.
And then looked up some linear algebra.
So that was your backup plan. If you couldn't find something during the week, you'd learn something you knew yourself.
Right.
Which counts. All right. And mine is to ask more what I phrase stupid question, which later when I listened to the podcast, I was like, what a conceited jerk. So instead of saying that, I'm going to just say that I'm going to do better at asking more questions, even if I know the answer, during the show, so that we bring the discussion to a point where everyone understands what's going on. So if I don't do that this week, give me a call. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We love your input, as we do love your creativity as well. The song today was from Michael Newman. Thank you, Michael, for that.
Was that Michael Newman's song?
No, I'm sorry. I think it was Michael Saunders' song.
Michael Saunders.
It was definitely Michael Saunders' song. And we welcome you to go ahead and make a theme song for us. If you have a feeling of what the show feels like to you and you are a musical artist, please go ahead and whip out a theme song and send it our way and we'll play it. GeekSpeak is a Creative Commons endeavor. Share and share alike. All right. Let's start up with you've got one.
My resolution?
Your resolution. Oh, mine was, yeah, got that. Okay, good. Yeah, yours.
Well, I have a lot of them because I do resolutions and goals every year. And,
oh, you do?
Yeah, I do a set, you know. But I think what I'll probably mention of the one, you know, aside from things like, you know, get rid of old electronics, finish my son's room, painting, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
One thing that I think I'm probably going to give a shot at is this year I'm going to try to learn how to meditate.
Yeah?
Yeah.
To get yourself to a point where...
Well, I just think that there's a lot of good to be gotten out of meditation, and I don't want to become like a Buddhist or mm-hmm. some religion or anything. But
you want to be disassociated with everything in the world.
I want to do it from the standpoint of the mental, benefit. You know,
very cool.
And just to cover, like, Buddhism is not about dissociation.
No, you could be Buddhist.
God, I didn't mean to say that.
You know what? Maybe I'll become Buddhist. I don't know. I'm not trying to be a Buddhist. I'm just saying that my goals aren't to become part of a religion, but they are to, you know, gain the benefits from meditation.
Cool.
And I also ran across a thing that was kind of funny. When I was kind of like looking, you know, I was looking up yoga. Should I do yoga or something like that? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a thing called laughing yoga.
I haven't heard of it. Sounds awesome.
you just laugh. And you know, I thought it was like an onion thing, like
right.
a joke thing or whatever. But, it's actually, it's just really well known. It's been around a long time. This guy goes up there.
You know,
there.
Al, I kind of surprised you by the resolution. I didn't say that I was going to ask you beforehand, and I'm damn impressed.
Yeah.
Good job.
Well,
good resolution.
That's the way it goes.
See if you follow through. Yeah. The personal resolution I have is to take a photograph of somebody, a new photograph every day, a portrait of somebody. And I'm doing okay so far. I've got one for every day. But
wow.
It is hard to ask people to take their photograph.
Well, you have to do 365 people.
Yes.
And you don't have that many accessible friends, so you'd have to take some of strangers.
No, I have that many accessible friends.
You have 365 friends that
sure.
you line
I have
up and
500 people on Facebook that I know.
Well, I think I have like three.
Yeah, well,
you guys. And...
No, it is a bit of like going to the coffee shop I go to and mm-hmm. saying, hi, do you mind if I take your picture? And that kind of thing, which is, it's not exactly strangers, mm-hmm. but it's an uncomfortable experience.
Right.
Yeah. Like I kind of wimped out last night at subbing. I couldn't ask.
Are you using your phone or your camera?
I'm using my camera. I'm carrying my camera everywhere.
So you're going to use your camera for every picture?
Yeah.
You're not going to use your phone?
No, I'm not going to use a sketch pad. Just use my camera.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a commitment.
But I think I did one with my phone just because the camera shot wasn't very good.
What happens if you go somewhere and you realize you forgot your phone?
I'll steal one.
I mean, you forgot your camera.
I'll steal a camera.
You'll steal somebody's
mm-hmm.
camera?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Let's go on with the geek news, shall we? And Mr. Miles Elam, I think we'll head to you.
This has been covered in other news sources, but it bears repeating if we're on Geek Speak. The link between, or the supposed link, I should say, between vaccines and autism. And I probably just, messed things up by saying that there was a link, because
there isn't.
The British Medical Journal has come out looking at the former British surgeon who published the initial research that gave people this idea. Not only did they find problems with it, because this happens all the time in medicine and science, to look at a study and go, well, it doesn't really show anything and this methodology was wrong. They actually found that his actions were an act of fraud.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't even there was some mistake made, or he didn't use all. Yeah, he didn't use his something that was statistically significant and something like that. It's no, he lied. I absolutely fabricated.
This was the initial story. In what
this
way?
Is this the person that really got the anti-vaxxer movement going?
Because of the first, it was the first study to try to make some association.
And he was also one of the first medical doctors to come forward and say that there's this link and here's why it happens stuff like that.
But in looking at it, it wasn't just bad science, it was fraud.
Yes.
Wow.
There's a whole book.
Is bad science, but yes, it is also fraud.
There's a book. There's a listing in the back of Science News. It's a sort of a weekly science periodical, and they list books, that you can get,
mm-hmm.
and they're all science related. And there's a book that's called, Autism Will, or Vaccines and Will Give You Autism or something. And the whole book is about how wrong it was and how it was flawed, how every mm-hmm. part of it was flawed. I mean, it's an entire book somebody wrote, but as soon as it hits the media and the media goes with it and somebody hears it and repeats it, it's over. You can't stop misinformation sometimes. People just perpetuate that whole thing.
Well, it's really frustrating when we have a disease or some situation like autism where we don't really have the answers. We don't have good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And people want reasons. We're really good at trying to have reasons. Like there's a lot of that in our built in. We try to figure out a reason for something. And unfortunately, sometimes the reasons we come up with are fictitious.
Well, human beings are not logic engines. We're pattern matchers.
Mm-hmm.
And so as many times we will see patterns where there aren't any. And that comes into that whole correlation is not causation that we
sure.
bring up from time to time. And Don brings it up quite often as well. But you don't need to take our word for it, because we're not doctors.
True.
Of course, we are no more an authority on medicine than, your plumber is. At the same time, I'm going to link up a document from the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it's going to list most of the major studies
mm-hmm.
Having to do with this. So if you are curious about this and you want to learn more, I will put this up on our website. It's a PDF. You can print it out or just view it online. And then it links to multiple other 14 other studies, I believe, that you can read in depth as much detail as you want.
And actually, I found that book too that I just, and this is a recent, this book just came out. It's called, and it's a book review. You can read this review or you can buy the book. The name of the book is Deadly Choices: How the Anti-Vaccine Movement Threatens Us All. It's by Nathan Seppa. And the book just came out, and it's just completely, it's from Science News. This isn't like some crazy, kooky, self-published thing.
The anti-vaccine movement is connected to this article, the story of yours, Miles? About autism?
Right. That's what it's about.
It's really the argument?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you. And how does an anti-vaccine movement threaten us?
What you're talking about is with regard to a vaccine, and this is not to say that vaccines are always safe. They're not. Sometimes vaccines are produced through eggs. That's how they get the material, and some people are allergic to eggs. You have different reactions from different people. So I'm not saying that vaccines are 100% harmless. That's not the message giving here. But when talking about when you talk about autism, for example, and say like, oh, it's going to cause autism, and it can be a very debilitating condition.
Mm-hmm.
With vaccines, if you have a large number of people that are vaccinated, then even the people who are not vaccinated, like the people who can't take it because of an allergy or they have a strong reaction to it, are protected because the disease doesn't have a path to get to them.
There's not enough volume. It's called herd immunity.
Right. And if you don't have that, if not enough people are vaccinated, you end up not only hurting yourself, but you hurt the people in your community as well, because then the virus, you know, or pathogen, whatever it is, can take hold.
Right.
By the time,
can transmit.
By the time they proved that study was false, that was a 1988 scare that British doctor did. By the time they proved it false, 4 unvaccinated children had died of measles, and many more had gotten sick.
Right. So you also have to weigh, when people talk about gets autism, autism is a horrible thing, but you also have to, it's like in economics when you talk about an opportunity cost.
Yeah, but we're not talking about opportunity cost with regards to this and autism, because they're not connected.
Right, right. But even if they were,
right, we still have to do that.
The dangers associated with
there
getting
is,
the health impact of getting measles,
right,
or a serious case of the flu or anything like that is actually a greater health risk than if they got autism.
Now, if you're interested in hearing about this from a doctor, I recommend a podcast called the Quack Cast. I'll link to it from the GeekSpeak website. It's a infectious disease doctor who does a podcast about infectious diseases and about this kind of topic, right? So he knows a lot about what the flu epidemic looked like last year in his hospital, how it was treated, how it spread, and he knows a lot about it because that's his profession. He's a good speaker. So the Quack Cast I recommend, and I'll put up on GeekSpeak. But let's talk about something a little more networky and geeky and technical. And Al, you want to talk about office lights?
Oh, sure.
nice segue.
Yeah, that's we're professionals here.
No, actually, we are specifically not professionals. We don't get paid.
Well, I was being facetious.
Well, I get paid twice as much as you do.
Well, I top you all.
Why is that? Because you do it half as much?
Nothing from nothing leaves nothing.
All right.
Anyway, there was an article in the Mercury News a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to bring this up before because it's very cool. It's about networks within office buildings. Now, there's a company that has produced what they call the LVX system. And what it does is it puts clusters of light-emitting diodes, LEDs, in standard light fixtures.
Like office light fixtures, yeah, where like fluorescent tubes would go.
Yeah, like office light fixtures. And so they put these LEDs in there, and LEDs are little chips that vibrate at a specific frequency, and they can transmit data. I mean, any kind of an optocoupler, any of these things, they're basically transmitting data by changing, you know, fiber optics, all that kind of stuff. Well, they're able to take these lights and have the network go through the lights, and I guess they've got it up to 3 megabits per second, which is sort of about roughly a regular old DSL line speed. And, you know, so you have a little modem that sits on top of your computer, and you're just underneath, you know, your office lights in the ceiling, and it's connecting you to the internet through this light system, you know, just completely a separate system. It's not, you know, going through Ethernet or anything. It's all going through your lights, and they're all, you know, out throughout the building.
So it's wireless, but not, but it's visible light spectrum wireless.
It's visible light spectrum. I'm not sure if...
Which means that if you don't have windows to the outside, it's secure from local eavesdropping.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I think that you couldn't really connect to this because you'd have to find a way to see the light.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, I looked a little bit on this, and how does the communication back from the laptop back up to the network work?
It's a light sensor.
that goes. I know it's, that's a One Direction, but you need to send packets back up too. Requests and stuff have to go.
It's two way.
It's two way
communication. Yeah.
So it also has light. Yeah. On
Now this is and what it does is it moves the whole bunch of data that's going through your wireless system out of your wireless system, so you don't have this like giant blob of data going through you. It's freeing up spectrum, basically. Mm-hmm. The thing about you hear about this and you think, oh, that's kind of cool, but it seems like a lot of I'm going to change all my lights and all that kind of stuff. Well, the company that did this in Minnesota, they just wanted the LED lights. This has nothing to do with the network.
Oh, right.
They just did it to save money on their lights. And in the meantime, they have this the company they went to install these LED lights said, oh, by the way,
you can make it a network as well.
This can also be a network.
Well, switching over to LED lighting makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's going to be less power.
I'm skeptical. I call foul.
In what way?
It's obviously only going to be line of sight.
Right.
So it's not going to replace anyone's Wi-Fi. It would replace, it would be more akin to like a Bluetooth communication line.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to be closer, you have to have line of sight, you can't have much reflection.
I went and looked on the website, and that was kind of my take on it too, Miles. The one thing that got me was that the cost of the units is equivalent to an LED light fixture, right? So it's an LED light fixture replacing fluorescence, which is better lighting and cheaper, less power use, and longer-lasting instrument. Expensive.
But you're getting the lights anyway.
If you're going to upgrade your network, you don't have to do that. So it's connecting both those services together. It's kind of in this space. It's not sure if it's going to work.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, they've done it. The company, by the way, is called LVX System.
Right.
And they're a startup, and they're in Minnesota. And this has actually been implemented, and they are using it.
Right.
So it's not like, oh, this is a theoretical thing we can do. The Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport is now considering moving to this whole LVX system as well. It's funny. They call it the LVX system, and the name of the company is LVX system, so it's a little weird.
Well, it's the product. Miles, I think the reason it's compelling to a company is that you don't have your Wi-Fi going outside your building.
I totally get that.
Yeah, I think that's why it's compelling. So like an airport, you have to be in a certain area, very specifically in a certain area. You have to be under those lights for it to work. So it becomes, it's almost like highly localized Wi-Fi. Kind of interesting.
Well, the lights are controllable. I mean, they can, since they're LED, you can also control the color of the light.
That's true.
So if for instance, like say a building had these lights all over in the building and there was a fire, all of a sudden, the lights turn into a trail that leads to the exit, a certain color.
Mm-hmm.
Follow the green or the red light or all the lights that lead you out of the building point or something. I mean, you can do that with LEDs.
When I look on the website, I'm trying to play devil's advocate. I mean, I'm trying to not play devil's advocate, but I got to say I'm skeptical as well about the system. But we'll move on, shall we, Mr. Miles Elam. You haven't told me what news stories you have for
the day. Yes, it's all a big surprise.
So hit me with
even
it.
To him.
I was going to talk a little bit about WikiLeaks. One of the things that's come up recently is the U.S. has issued a subpoena to Twitter to give information, private information about a user. And one of the problems is that this user, well, there are many problems with this. Number one, WikiLeaks is not a U.S. organization.
It's not? WikiLeaks, right.
WikiLeaks, yeah.
Sure.
Two, WikiLeaks did not release the information as a U.S. entity.
Okay.
Like, it released it over the internet.
Okay.
And three, many people who are reading it are not in the U.S. So right. U.S. jurisdiction gets a little
But
odd.
Twitter is an American company.
Yes, but I would imagine, like many companies, they have a presence off not just in the U.S. as well. So jurisdictionally,
I'm not sure. Let me ask you, how much information does Twitter have about its users?
I don't know.
I guess they have the IP addresses of where they post from and what kind of tools they're using to post. And then maybe a couple of
Most of Twitter's messages are public, but users can also send private messages on the system.
Yeah. Right, and so the private messages.
The reason why this comes to be a big deal, if you or I were to do this, it seems pretty straightforward. Like, we were accessing Twitter in the U.S., a U.S. company, they submitted a subpoena. However, the person who is trying to fight this is not in the U.S. In fact, they're from Iceland. And more to the point, she is a member of Iceland's parliament.
Hmm.
And so, as a member of parliament, she may be sending messages that she does not want the U.S. government to know.
Through a U.S. service?
Through a service that isn't necessarily... I mean, the internet is not...
localized.
When you go to a website, that website may very well be in Japan. Does that mean that it should be subject to the local laws of where you are accessing it?
I think Twitter is incorporated in the United States.
We'll just have to forego the fact, though, that a person in government is using Twitter to send
private messages.
Let's just figure, let's take that silliness and just like assume that we're not thinking about it and then go on to the meat of the problem. her point, you know.
But yeah.
The fact that they would use Twitter, I mean, come on.
The thing is, when you're trying to collect information on someone, any kind of information is useful and can't do anything but help the prosecution.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, it might not be anything personal. It might not be anything regarding business. Mm-hmm. It might be something simply about going to Johnny's birthday party at a certain day, but then all of a sudden they know where she was that day. You know, there's so privacy is important to us for a reason.
But this does raise issues of if assuming this is all on the up and up, that Twitter does is subject to that U.S. subpoena and it does go through. I think that this would be have a very chilling effect upon communication lines. You'd start seeing a mass migration from U.S.-based services to services that have a more international flavor, like they have services where they are incorporated as a subsidiary or something like that outside the U.S. or just a non-U.S. entity.
Right. All right. Well, thank you very much for that WikiLeaks story. Whenever I hear about WikiLeaks, the one thing that gets me is that this term wiki has been put in this highly political space, which it's like saying it's a term about technology.
Like saying blog leak?
Yeah. It's just not.
Blog leaks.
I wish
leaks.
They hadn't been called that way.
Yeah, web leaks.
Yeah, web leaks or whatever. Yeah. It's
typewriter leaks.
Let's move on to something else. Shall we, gentlemen? What's the weirdest name ever, Al?
Oh, yes. I was calling it mime, and you said it's meme.
Meme.
Yeah.
An internet meme?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, memes are interesting. Mimes are annoying.
Hey. Yeah. As a professional mime in my high school years, Miles, I just want to say...
That's really annoying.
It really looks like he was in that box.
Really felt like he was in a box.
Please, go on with your story.
Anyway, this meme is a meme is an internet, you know, what do you call it, trend or fad or something that goes around, you know, like dancing baby, that kind of thing. This is a weird one. If you type this specific number into Google's search field, and then you click search and then click on images, you get all you get is thousands and thousands of people with their heads in their freezers.
What's the number?
The number is 241-543-903. That's 241-543-903.
Call now. It's actually not a phone number.
You want a Bissell shampooer? You ever get that? I keep repeating. Anyway, we'll have this on our site. You can go and do it. And it's weird because people, you know, they stick their head in their freezer and they get their camera in there somehow and they take a picture of their head in there.
Right.
And it's thousands of pictures of people sticking their heads in their freezer.
Right. The subject matter is unusual.
Yes.
At the same time, the phenomenon of what's going on, I think, will be more and more common, which is if you have a group of people, it doesn't even have to be that large, but they all decide we're going to use this number, we're going to use this made-up word, even if no one's ever heard of it. As soon as you have all of that done, like multiple pages that have that, and then Google goes and indexes it, you just need to have one person send it out to, you know, some aggregation site. Remember, hey, what happens if you put in this really wacky word?
Right.
And then you get
The
result.
I mean, it's a neat avenue for personal expression. And the way that you would do this, if you wanted to be part of this, is you would take a picture of your your head in a freezer.
Do you have to disconnect your head from your torso?
No, all the heads are connected. Okay, let me make that clear right off the bat.
Or you get a partner, someone else to like take a picture of you with your head in.
They're funny, okay? And you upload the photo to some internet photo storage place like Flickr and then tag the file with,
24154390 3.
Yes. And then Google picks it up and it ends up in their image search. So like I said, it's not just the regular Google search, but you type the number in, and then you hit image search. There's if you're not familiar with using Google for image search, it's like I'm immensely familiar with. But, when you need to find a particular image, you type it in, you press image search. Sure. And it's weird. I mean, there's a lot of really funny ones.
There are some funny ones.
And it's just, I think it is one of the weirdest things I've seen.
There's no real clarity that I can find about this number.
I don't think there's any reason for that number, and I don't get it. It's not the right amount of numbers for a phone number. I see three sets of three, so I have no idea what that means.
Very cool. I wonder if doing this is relatively easy, just to find a clever thing to do.
Like there's some clever ones,
Right. Thank you very much for that short and interesting story, I've got to say. Geek Speak on KSP is supported by Atheists of Santa Cruz and Monterey Counties, hosting a meetup January 11th at May Gardens in Santa Cruz at 7 p.m. To RSVP or for more information, facebook.com/friendlyfreethinkers or on Google search, just simply Santa Cruz Atheist Meetup. I didn't know about this till then. That's pretty cool. Maybe we'll go. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. My name is Lyle Troxel. We're taking your calls with questions and comments about technology right now on KOSP. The phone numbers are 47s. You know what? I'll just give the toll-free. 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-555-5877. In the air with me is Miles Elam and Al Luckow. I'm Lyle Troxel. Rick is waiting for your calls of questions and comments about technology. Again, the phone number, 1-800-655-5877. While we're waiting for calls to come in, let's go ahead and do another news story from Mr. Elam, I would assume.
Yes. So many times when we think of smartphones these days, we think of two major competitors, or actually three. We think of the iPhone, we think of Android phones as a collection, and we think of BlackBerry.
Yes, okay. I was thinking those are the three. I don't know the third, but yes, BlackBerry, that's good.
And maybe Microsoft. Palm's WebOS, like Palm. And more and more people talk about, as far as the consumer line, not necessarily as business, the iPhone and Android.
Right.
Well, did you know that you can, in fact, install Android onto an iPhone?
What? Really?
Some folks have done a port so that a jailbroken 3G and I believe a 3GS as well.
Miles, what does jailbroken mean?
Jailbreaking means that you are able to get full hardware access to the phone. The iPhone doesn't allow you to do certain things. Like, for example, an application that's running on your phone doesn't have access to any other application's data. And it doesn't have access to the root file system of the phone.
Uh-huh.
The reason for this is so that your calendar app that you really like that you downloaded or to-do app doesn't start doing things that it's not allowed to do to your phone, like rewriting some data and finding out what your personal messages are in some, in your SMS messages and pumping them back to a company.
Or it doesn't take the entire contents of your address book and then send it out to thousands of...
I thought those things were
actually protected. They do have access to the address book, but that's another...
those things I thought are also protected because Apple reviews all the products that they have that put on their iPhone.
That is a vetting process, but there is another layer
So what you're saying is even as a programmer, if you were to program something, there are some things you can't do because the operating system controls you in a certain way. But not just as a programmer, just simply as a user, you can't – like, for example, you can't install applications from other people. If you wrote an application without giving it to Apple, I can't get it.
Yes, you could. No. On an ad hoc basis, you could as long as I had –
But it would be difficult.
Well, it would have to be in person.
You wouldn't be able to put it on your website.
It's a provisional
download. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Right, so in that situation, jailbreaking would allow you to do those things?
Yes, jailbreaking allows you to install software without going through the App Store.
All right, so go on. If you jailbreak an iPhone, you can do what? How do you install
Then you can install anything you want. And most of the time, jailbroken phones install another version of iOS, the operating system that runs on iPhones. And so you're able to use the iPhone as it normally acts and then add on some more applications or do other things. It was also used for like tethering back in back before AT&T allowed tethering. Here, you're actually installing a completely different operating system.
Wow.
Well, Android.
In other words, Android, which is a Linux.
So the Android port that they created for the iPhone, is it functional? Does it do all the stuff Android phones do? Like you can use the camera and all that?
Well, it's not. It still has some bugs. They're still working on it. It is the most recent version of Android OS, so 2.3 Gingerbread.
So then the hacked version that's on the iPhone is more recent than most of the people's Android phones that they buy today.
But then again, a lot of people who have Android phones, if they can't, it depends upon the carrier, but some of them you can hack and then you can put on the newest version however you like. But
why would you buy an iPhone and then put Android on it?
I think just to do it.
Yeah, okay. That's good enough.
Well, there's no reason. But there's also, with Android, there's the turn-by-turn directions for maps that isn't available on iPhone. There's a different ecosystem of applications for the Android than there is for the iPhone. And development.
So if you bought an iPhone already and you're kind of regretting the purchase and you wanted to get an Android, you could do this at this point.
Right, or that's you had an access to an older version of it because you've been upgrading iPhones just to like see it and try it out and have an Android phone.
That's what Miles is doing.
Yeah.
Do you have an old iPhone you're going to do this with?
I have a couple of them, actually.
Oh, but you got to do it, man. It's great.
It does not work for the iPhone 4, however. They're still working on it.
New hardware.
So far,
hardware crack, right?
It's just the older models. So the 3G and the... Oh, I'm sorry, the 3G. The 3GS and the iPhone 4 are both in process.
Okay. All right, well, thank you for that that hacking story. It's kind of cool. It looks like we've got some calls coming in, so why don't we go ahead and take one of those, shall we? We didn't do a geek bit, did we?
Not really.
But earlier I did mention the QuackCast, which I got to say is probably my recommendation this week.
There's a Skype thing.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
The iPhone app Skype. You know, Skype. People use Skype for video conferencing. The iPhone app Skype now does video over 3G. So that means if you update your version of Skype on the iPhone and you want to do video conferencing, you can do it from anywhere, even if you're not in a Wi-Fi area. So you could be like in your, you know, in the park or something and do Wi-Fi or do video conferencing. And I tried it and it actually did work. It's not as good as Apple's FaceTime because it's just, I think what happened is I believe Skype is bypassing H.264 video, the video codec, and that's how they're able to do this. But H.264 is better. But it's acceptable.
But there are other things they can do. They can also lower the resolution. Even if you're still using H.264, you can lower the resolution. You can also increase the compression ratio.
You know what we should do, Al? What we should probably do is you and I should try, you know, get one location, both our houses, with Wi-Fi and try both of them and see if we can tell the difference between the two qualities.
Yeah. I mean, I think I tried to do that with you.
Yeah, okay. I haven't updated the Skype yet. So.
I feel a disturbance as if millions of AT&T network engineers were crying out in terror and suddenly silenced.
Well, the video isn't as good as FaceTime, but I tell you, it is acceptable from the 3G video conferencing from phones that I've tried. Yeah. I've tried a number of them. And the other thing is that Skype is more universal. I mean, everybody has Skype.
That's right.
So that's the thing
like
that makes it really...
Yeah, setting up PixieCan, which we've tried.
Yeah, which is like nobody has that.
Nobody has that. But Skype a lot of people have.
Yeah.
And of course, I don't know if we covered this a while ago, there is a beta version of FaceTime for the Macintosh laptops and personal computers. So you can actually call somebody else's iPhone 4 from your Mac.
Which works well.
That. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a call, shall we? I think that we will speak with Elizabeth from Aptos. Elizabeth, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello, guys. Hi. I love that song, today's song.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll let Michael know.
Always makes me smile. My husband, the real geek in the family, had to reinstall basically everything on my computer. And in doing so, I lost that cute little thing. I'm on a MacBook where you go to the edit file and then you can put in the special characters like the little hearts and other ridiculous things. So when I open that, it's just empty.
What is it that you're opening?
It's, you know, into the edit file. I guess it's in Safari that I usually access it, like for Twitter. But if you, on top, it doesn't edit, and then you go down the menu, and at the very bottom it says special characters, and then when you go to that...
In Safari?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the way to do this on a Mac, I'll just let you know, is if you go to System Preferences, and you select the keyboard preference pane...
Okay.
Then at the very bottom of that, there's a Show Keyboard and Character Viewer in Menu Bar. Check that checkbox. And in the upper right-hand corner of your screen up near the clock and stuff, there'll be a new item up there. And
okay, so you're saying Preferences...
System Preferences. System Preferences under the Apple.
I got that. Logo. That's my call waiting.
Uh-huh. And then under System Preferences, click the Keyboard pane. And then Show Keyboard and Character Viewer in Menu Bar.
Why can't I get... Oh, there's... Preferences. Okay.
tech support on radio. So
yeah,
delicious.
I know. Well, actually, okay. System preferences, and then there's a keyboard.
Do you see keyboard?
Which is under keyboard. Where is that?
Keyboard is under hardware. It's the second row.
Bluetooth displays. Oh, keyboard and mouse. Okay, yes.
Okay, so you have a different operating system than me. And under the keyboard area of that, do you see anywhere that says Show Keyboard and Character Viewer in Menu Bar? That's what you're going to look for. What's going to do is going to pop up a little tiny thing in the upper right-hand corner, and when you select that, you can Show Keyboard Viewer and or Show Character Viewer. And,
oh, the key, like the keyboard shortcuts?
Yeah, Show Character Viewer is actually what you want. No, not keyboard
Well, I mean,
shortcuts.
What's the part on top before you go
tab,
to the...
Keyboard.
I mean, which... I have keyboard.
Problem is we have different operating systems. I'm using Snow Leopard, and you're using something like... probably Leopard or even earlier than that. So
The
interface can be slightly different. But what you're looking for is Show Keyboard and Character Viewer in Menu Bar.
Show Keyboard and Character Viewing. Okay.
Anyway, you look around for that, and what you'll see is up in the right-hand corner, you'll get a little task that allows you to open up a Character Viewer. And Character Viewer then allows you to put in any ASCII characters by looking at the actual characters and then selecting them. And you can type this in any application.
Oh, okay. I'll try that.
All right. Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you very much.
You bet. If anyone knows just a second, Elizabeth. If anyone knows why Elizabeth's not seeing this thing that she used to see in Safari, I'd love to know. It might be a developer thing. You could turn on Safari developing tools, and maybe it'd show up. Miles, do you know about this thing under Edit? I mean, I do have under my Safari. I've got special characters at the bottom, so mine's there in Safari. I just don't know why.
Well, would it be a Safari preference?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I see.
It brings up the thing is it's bringing up the same tool. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I have it on my box. I don't know why it's not.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it's because you don't have that choice under keyboards set up.
And the reinstall probably reset that bit. That's all.
Probably.
When I go to that, like if I want the little stupid hearts, it will show up somehow.
It should show back up. Yeah.
Okay. And
basically, you want to
restart.
You're gonna
want to look under the keyboard preference pane and take a look and try to find something that shows the viewer in the menu bar. But it could be that something else is going on, like you don't have a language pack installed correctly, like not an extended language pack. That's a possibility, but it seems a little
weird
to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, everything's Unicode at this point, and they are Unicode glyphs, so it's a. The only thing I could think of would be there was no font available that would be able to show it. But on a Mac,
they're installed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always confused by the fonts and the glyphs. Like, depending on what, like, these glyphs are not standard glyphs, right? Depending on the font, they show differently. Isn't that correct?
Right.
So if the viewer that's reading your message is always using some strange font that doesn't have those things rendered, then it's not going to work. Right? Come on, Miles. Help me out here.
Except that even if the font weren't there, you'd think you'd still see the box that shows, like, there's a code point here, but I don't know how to render it.
All right.
Anyway.
We've got a couple calls in the queue. I'm looking forward to them. But let's go ahead and take from Monterey. Susan, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, Susan.
So much appreciate your program. I listen all the time, even though I don't know what you're talking about.
No one does.
But at least it opens
Not
up
even
a
us.
Portal in my mind.
It's the highest praise we always get.
Yep. Thank you.
You know, I'm curious. I'm toying with an idea, and I want to find out about a home studio, from like a remote a studio for radio.
Ah, for radio.
So
okay.
I'm contemplating, and I just wondered if you know if there's already packages that are already packaged that I could buy, or how I could set up one of my own.
Now, what kind of broadcasting do you want to be doing? Via public radio kind of thing, or do you want to just be recording audio?
No, just a local station here. And I'm I approach the guy. He offered me a program, but I don't want to travel. I'm trying to figure out if I can do it, you know, from home.
Okay, so you're basically want to set up a small radio station from your home, but the issue is getting the content to the actual distributor, right? So the geeks here in the room, I can go ahead and do a show live from the back of a truck on Pacific Avenue. We did that in December.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Didn't work so well.
Well, the year before it worked well.
I think I remember.
It was raining. We were under a tarp, and we were all wet. Come on.
But in any case, the ability to do that's fine, but at the station, someone had to be there to connect to us and you know, slide the sliders up and everything. So really, the first issue is going to be your manpower. But the question I have is, do you really want to be on radio, or do you want to be producing content that people can listen to? Because a lot more people can listen to a podcast than any radio station in the world, right? There's actually larger distribution via the network rather than the radio waves. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. But what I guess, because, see, I wanted to invite call-ins. And I wonder,
yes, that is the trick with podcasting, that it's very hard to get people to call in. The way you do it, the thing is, there's a lot of tricks in radio. The car talk, you know, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers,
right.
Car talk that's going to be on right after Geek Speak, actually, and also tomorrow,
yeah.
On KOSP. They don't do live calls. What they do is they give out a phone number, because we have a show that gets streamed to us, right? It's not actually being produced live like GeekSpeak is. So what they do is they have an 800 number. People call and leave a message, and then their staff calls them up and sets up times to interview them, and then they record all of that in their studio like it's a normal live call, and then say, let's take the next person, blah, blah, blah. Now, it's similar in the sense that it is a live conversation with a person, but it's not happening at a time that's when you're listening on the radio. So you can't call in and get on the air. You call in, get into a queue, and later they call you and interview you. And that's actually why lots of times there's more information that the caller has on Click and Clack than what they know about, right? So they say, well, then I went to my mechanic. It's like, well, you just called us. So that's what's happening, is there's a time delay.
And that's also why Click and Clack seem like, you know, they have a lot of resources available because they've had time to look into this issue.
Actually, lots of times the hosts don't know anything about the call. And that's so that there's still the live banter
works. What they do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You have to kind of keep it quiet, because if not, then you look it up and you have these canned, simple mm-hmm. responses. Like the call that we just did about Safari and the keypad, we would have researched that, had mm-hmm. a perfect answer, and never been stumped.
Well,
and then the humor wouldn't have come out.
Right. Right.
Of us being idiots. So,
but actually, we pre-record our show, and we're actually doing a double thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's really confusing.
And we're making ourselves seem live, and then making mistakes purposely. So that's, we've got a really high
tech. So producing radio at home, the first thing you need to know, transom.org, TRANSOM.org.
It's a great site.
Great site about making good audio. And that's crucial. The next thing is, you're right, you're touching base on exactly why KOSP and all local public radio stations work. There is a connection to the local environment that GeekSpeak does, that Dr. Don does before us, that is not something you can do on the network, on the internet very easily right now. And the big reason for that is that fat audio pipe shooting down from KOSP that hits everybody's radio in the central coast of California, and that's real time, except for it's not. We're actually in an 8-second delay or something because of digital transcoding. But, you know, it's live. With delay. So to do that, you're going to have a good communication with your radio station. And then the solution is, the packages, go ahead and find what you want to look for from the hardware perspective is, you want to get a relatively decent microphone, and taking calls at your house, that's actually really tricky, except that you could do it with Skype. So I guess what you could do is, you could get a Skype incoming line, you could get a thing called audio, what's the thing that records Skype? We've had them on the show before.
It's called
Audio Hijack.
Well, there's Audio Hijack, there's Call Recorder.
Call Recorder.
You know.
Yeah, so these are both applications that allow you to record a Skype conversation. So then you get a Skype phone number, let people call that Skype phone number. Then when it rings on your computer, you start recording it, and you have a conversation with them through your computer, basically. In that situation, all you're really going to need is a USB microphone. If you're going to interview people live, real time, you need to have some kind of mixer that mixes both microphones in. So when I go on location or whatever, I bring a small mixer that's about a 5-channel mixer with microphones. That kind of kit can cost you the $200, $300 pretty easily. A good microphone can cost you $600 if you want a one like I'm using right now, talking to everyone. So that kit's kind of expensive, but unfortunately there's a lot of research involved in doing it. And the place to do a lot of that research, transom.org.
Transom.org.
And that's TRANSOM
sort of reminiscent of the publishers when people would throw their books or manuscripts over through the crowd.
I think that has to do with it. I think that it's about being outspoken. Yeah. So the other thing is to note is if you do look and find, there's a few websites out there that you can buy this kind of stuff on. And I'll put them up on the GeekSpeak show page notes today because I do a lot of this kind of purchasing for work. If you'd like to look at what you're about to buy and then send the geeks an email, like, I'm thinking about getting this for it, we'd be happy to give it a little glance over and give a yes or no on it. Okay?
Very good. I appreciate it.
All right, Susan, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So, Al, I ran into some friends and some relatives over this break of seeing a lot of people, mm-hmm. and people mentioned GeekSpeak, and almost every one of them mentioned the USB of the week. It's gone out of flavor a little bit. Are you going to be renewing it, or are you...
Yes, I am taking a little bit of a hiatus.
Okay.
I thought, you know, I would do it once or a couple of times and have some fun
with it. It's been a big success.
And then I realized, you know what, there is a never-ending fountain of ridiculously crazy USB devices.
You know, I do a lot of small project digital art kind of work, mm-hmm. and constantly now when people are saying, what I need to do is this and this, how do I going to power that? My response normally is, do it USB, because mm-hmm. it's a nice standard USB. You can get a little tiny USB plug that gives you power. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to have a computer.
Yep.
It's a great power source, and that really is why there's all these crazy USB of the weeks. The thing that got me is... You've done a ton of them, and this reminded me because transom.org. Uh-huh. I'm assuming you looked up for figuring out the software and stuff on editing these things.
Yes,
because of the content that we produce for GeekSpeak, you're the one that's doing the pre-edited, really nice.
Sometimes,
stuff.
Yeah, sometimes, I try to do that, and when I have time, transom.org is just a fantastic like tutorial. Just like if you want to get into audio and all that kind of stuff,
it's
just
the place.
All these tutorial, all these neat things, and I don't know how they make money or anything, but they just really, it's just one of those great things. You know, like GeekSpeak.
We had a call from Watsonville. Judith called in to say that Tiger, the operating system, in the edit menu, from particularly any program regarding the special mic.
So Tiger being OS 10, three revisions back.
Right.
Yeah.
It can do that, it sounds like.
So I just checked that, and when I looked in Chrome and edit, it had special characters. It's not program specific.
It's not program specific. That's what we thought. But the question is, why is it sometimes show up and sometimes doesn't? So we'll have to figure that out. Maybe Ben could figure that out. Yeah, it's always showing up for me, whether I've got the other thing up there right here or not.
I'm on an iPad right now, so I can't. Which is working great, actually.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and do a news story. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. And Al, I was kind of curious about the touchscreen stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's a new type of touch, a tactile feel. It's, you know, you touch a screen, you move around, you're able to control the UI. But the one thing that is sort of missing is that touching back feeling.
Right.
And... There's a company called It's called Tesla Touch. I think it's the company, but it's actually associated with Carnegie Mellon and Disney, and they have created this touchscreen surface that gives you a tactile feel back. So when you're moving things around, and you might say, well, how does that make any sense? But it does make sense because if you think about those mice that have the little roller mm-hmm. Thing on them, so say there's certain mice that you have and it's got a little roller wheel on the top and it's for scrolling. Well, you could scroll back and forth, but what they've started doing is putting like little, you know, a little bit of it feels like a ratchet or something in there. And it makes you sense that there's movement going back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that's an example of tactile feedback. What they've done is they've made it so that you're getting this from the touchscreen. So like when you grab something and say drag it across, maybe a window drags across another window, maybe you feel a little bump, you're going over that window.
Right.
That it's a whole new dimension to what a touchscreen is.
I'm waiting for him to say it gives you a little electric shock. And
it's actually physical, right? Or is it mm-hmm. is it something else? How's it doing that?
It is an electrical. It's a slight vibration, is how they describe it.
Right.
And it is an electrical.
It's really interesting. I love the idea of looking at touch and how to falsify touch and stuff. Mm-hmm. We have extremely good touch sensors in our fingertips.
Yeah.
Like we can feel the difference of feeling what we can feel with our fingertips is incredible. And if you ever take a piece of just a hair and put on a flat surface and rub your finger, you can feel that so well, like no problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get smaller and smaller. There's not a point that you can feel that you can see that you can't feel. You know what I mean? That space is really small. So to try to say, let's trick the human fingertip to make it seem like something else is happening under the surface, it seems kind of like voodoo science to me. It's really hard to do.
If you're able to do things like, through the way that the electrical surface interacts with your skin, if you're able to do things like make something appear sticky, like when you touch it and it feels like it's sticky or soft or feels like you're touching a cat's fur or it's something that's bumpy or it's being dragged or it feels like you're going across sandpaper.
It's great, though. I mean, as a UI designer, isn't this like totally compelling to you? It's like, oh, my gosh, I have to think about what an object should feel like.
Oh, I would love to be able to start designing in this. Unfortunately, it's not commercially available yet.
Right.
And it's still in the development phase.
And that's a six-year-out kind of thing. Because, of course...
Well, who knows? You know, the way technology is moving nowadays...
Yeah,
you know,
Apple could release it next
month.
Who knows?
6 months from now, all of a sudden. Yeah, well, that was 6 months ago, you know?
All right, touch.
Exciting stuff.
Miles, I'm sure... I mean, this is actually Al's story, but I'm sure you know quite a bit about it, too. Apple's released an app store, but I thought they've had an app store for a long time, so I'm confused.
I know nothing about it.
Really?
I have not really followed it at all. I haven't installed the new update to the operating system. I haven't used it.
And you didn't give me your stories on the wiki, so...
You haven't installed
but
the new
But I do have a really quick thing, just because we're coming to the end of the show, so I can just do it. It is now illegal in California to impersonate a public person online.
Okay.
To impersonate someone.
What about on the radio? Can you still do it then?
Yeah, but if you were to go onto Facebook and say that you were Google CEO Eric Schmidt, you would then be liable for up to $1,000 fine or up to a year in jail.
Wow.
Wow.
Hmm.
Al, tell us about the App Store.
Well, it's the new OS of Apple. You install the new OS. It's an update. It's free if you have a Snow Leopard, and it installs an App Store. Now, you know that there's an App Store in iTunes, but this is an App Store that's like built into your OS. And what it allows you to do is to, buy applications directly from this store using your Apple account.
And these apps are actually individual developers' apps.
Yes, they don't have anything to do with Apple necessarily.
If you've got a cool idea for an application, now's the time to launch it because you've got a great sales channel.
Oh, yeah, and they take care of everything. And what's cool about it, and I bought one the other day, is that they have 1 million downloads the first day.
Right.
Anyway, you buy it, and then it installs in your system, and then the store knows you own it. And I think they allow you to install it on up to 5 devices, personal devices. So basically, you've bought this application, and now, your machine gets stolen, your hard drive crashes. You don't have to back up CDs.
Yeah.
I don't like having application CDs laying around.
I use for game management. What's that game management system, Miles, that's like that? It has applications on it. You install on your machine, then you can download it. Steam.
Steam, yeah.
Steam is games. Fantastic ability because on my Windows machine, I have my Steam account, and on my Mac, I have my Steam account. Yeah, some of the games are cross-browser. Mm-hmm. And anytime I want the game, I just load up my Steam account with my password and download and install the games.
You don't have to remember your serial numbers.
So it's nice to get rid of stuff.
It's like a forced backup. It's your applications.
GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at Santa Cruz Electronics.com. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses and tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specialize in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBTech.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KOSP.org. The Geeks Today, we're Miles Elam and Al Luckow, Rick Filmon answering phones. I'm Lyle Troxell. Hey, you can join us on Facebook. Yeah, that's right. We're on Facebook all the time. Just go to geekspeak.org, and on the left-hand side, you'll see our Facebook thing. So you can join and get little feeds from us. I tried to get a chat system running on IRC, and for some reason, I can't connect to IRC in the network. But for those that want to be live chatting with us, next week, we'll have a chat solution for you. I think that's all for us. And for KUSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Learn more about us at geekspeak.org. See you next week.